Today is Tuesday, May 7th, 2013. We have before us Senate File 783, the Safe and Supportive Minnesota Schools Act. Welcome, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my apologies. I was checking into Finance to make sure they had a quorum. And I think we have several members overlapping, so I suspect from time
that
to time.
That time of
we'll,
year.
Yes, it indeed. Well, Mr. Chair and members, while I sort out myself here, Mr. Chair, should we start off with the delete all amendment?
Yes, Senator Dibble, and we do have that here. We'll entertain a motion once we have a quorum. We have a couple people that have checked in, but how about if you take us through the A18, then we'll formally act on it.
Great.
And then go through the bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I think a number of you are also on education policy, so you might have already heard at least the initial presentation. But in short, high-level overview summary, we've waited a long time to fully and thoroughly and effectively address bullying in Minnesota across our state. We already knew this even in 2010 when a school survey conducted by the Department of Health and Education revealed that 13% of students report being bullied once or more a week. And Mr. Chair and members, quite frankly, that's a very low number compared to other kinds of measurements that have been taken of students that report in excess of 37-38% being bullied once or more per week. This gives rise to just tremendous feelings of hopelessness and despair, marginalization and alienation that we know has tremendous and negative consequences in young people's lives and in the life of our entire schools across the state. So the goal of this bill, Mr. Chair and members, is to ensure that every kid who goes to school in Minnesota knows that they are valued, that they will be safe, that they are loved, that they have an equal shot in life. Right now, members, we have the weakest anti-bullying law on the books at 37 words. Provides no appropriate guidance, no resources, no effective means of measuring. We have no idea there are improvements going on as a result of our efforts or lack of efforts. No schools have no direction to create a plan, to respond effectively, to train adults to intervene effectively, to respond to those exhibiting bullying behavior, targets of bullying. A little over a year ago, Mr. Chair members, the governor pulled together a task force on the prevention of bullying. And that group of folks met on a fairly aggressive timeline and had the opportunity to meet with experts from across the state and across the country, with parents, with educators, with school support personnel, with school leaders, with community members, and developed a list of recommendations. And those list of recommendations, I'm not sure if they're included in your packet or not, but in short, they provide for all of the qualities in an approach to bullying that I described earlier, making sure that schools are adopting effective and clear policies, are communicating them well to all stakeholders, that they're engaging parents, that they're acting at the local level, that there are tools for appropriate response with an emphasis on remedial responses, that we're measuring, that we're reporting, and that we're providing the kind of support from the state level to schools that are looking for support and improving their capacity. Most importantly, Mr. Chair, members, we heard from young people themselves with numerous listening sessions, reporting sessions, and it's young people themselves, and we'll hear from some of them today, that are crying out for response. We heard a lot of discussion yesterday in the other body about how we're just fine and we have all these tools in place. Well, that does not square with the experience that kids are reporting themselves, and that does not square with what parents are telling us and what teachers are telling us. They need tools, they need resources, they need clear support to take positive action on behalf of these young people. With that, Mr. Chair, members, I will do a quick overview of the bill, then maybe we can go to some testimony, and then I'm available to respond to questions and or amendments, which I hope there aren't any. So very, very quickly, Mr. Chair, I'll just do a quick run through and discuss how this bill is really written to the recommendations of the Prevention of Bullying Task Force recommendations, and then I'll suspend. Section 1, legislative purpose and intent. Mr. Chair, members, I know that often we don't pick these up in legislation, but we developed this language in conjunction and with the assistance of the Attorney General. Just to make it very clear and plain to all who are reading the provisions of the statute, what the purpose and intent, and frankly, to overcome some of the concerns that have been articulated in previous stops of this bill.
Excuse me, Senator Dibble, and again, we're referring to the A18 amendment.
Yes, has that been distributed? Is it in your packets?
Okay, which we'll act on when we have a quorum.
Right.
Okay, please proceed.
Thank you. A couple of items to keep in mind when you're looking at this. It's really written to reflect the decision of Tinker v. Des Moines, which specifically protects student free speech rights insofar as it does not improperly interfere with the rights of other students and the work or discipline of the school. And also, this is to make sure that we're clear that all students are entitled to a safe and supportive school environment. And this is about the atmosphere and the climate within the entire school and the good operation of the school for the benefit of all students. Section 2 has to do with making sure that we have summary data that we're measuring and reporting on bullying incidents kind of at the aggregate level for schools so that we have some idea of what's going on. This is consistent with some other measures that we include on school performance report cards. Section 3 really gets into kind of the crux of the proposal. And the goals of Section 3 are to make sure that we have strong policies, clear, objective, well-communicated to whom they apply and how they apply. And, Mr. Chair, members, some items to pay attention to. This scope and application of these bullying policies apply to students against other students enrolled at the same school, having to do with functions and atmosphere and climate that relate back to the school climate, the school activities, and the ability for the school to function and operate well. Going down to paragraph B, responding to concerns that have been articulated, this proposal applies only to public schools and charter schools, which are, of course, public schools. Going to subdivision 2, this is where districts and schools, in consultation with students, parents, and community organizations, are directed to adopt policies at the local level. And from time to time, take a look at those, review them, and revise them, et cetera. And then it establishes a set of standards for those policies, making sure that they're research-based, that they're well-researched, making sure that the policies apply to schools, students, school personnel, volunteers. The reason we say school personnel and volunteers, that's come up as a question, because there are other components of the policies, training and those sorts of things that apply to adults in the buildings. It's to emphasize remedial responses over punitive measures. We're not looking to create all kinds of new discipline, et cetera, but really respond to bullying in more of a preventative fashion and recognizing that bullying is very, very complicated. And students who bully sometimes are bullied and vice versa. So it's not clear-cut, and we're not seeking to really label folks, making sure that there's clear communication. There's a number of provisions for communication, opportunities to discuss the policy, opportunities to provide training, et cetera. Then we get into definitions. Bullying means a lot of different things to a lot of folks, so we try to create a fairly clear and straightforward definition of what we're talking about. And so You can read for yourself. Bullying means intimidating, threatening, abusive, or harassing conduct that is objectively offensive and causes physical harm, puts folks in reasonable fear of harm to themselves or property, materially and substantially interferes with educational opportunities, school functions, etc., violates reasonable expectations of privacy, involves defamation, intentional infliction of emotional distress, etc.
Excuse me, Sarah Dibble. Quorum's present. Proceed.
Of course, bringing cyberbullying into the definition of bullying, because we know what goes on computers. And then in paragraph D, we make sure that we enumerate specific characteristics. This is very important, members, because this has been a real gap, and this is something we heard about a lot in the debate and the discussion over the last few years, and certainly as the work of the task force unfolded. A lot of folks felt like in some districts they couldn't really respond to students, certain types of students. This has also been the source of a lot of discussion, some contention that somehow by doing this we're excluding some students. That's not the case. And if you read lines 4.18 to 4.19, prohibited conduct need not be based on any particular characteristic defined in this paragraph, or 363A is the Human Rights Act. Paragraph F is important. Remedial responses, again, that's not an emphasis on punitive action or punishment, but really we're looking to stop, prevent, redirect, change the climate, restore, etc. Some components, some elements of implementation are in subdivision 4, making sure that there's someone in the building who has a primary responsibility to make sure that there's an adequate response to bullying in terms of receiving reports, communicating, making sure an investigation is done on a timely basis, et cetera, making sure that adults in the building have responsibility of responding when they've seen bullying, making sure that schools are communicating how they're going to respond so that parents are clear. This is, again, a huge gap that we have right now. And as well as parents just simply don't know what's going to happen if, in fact, bullying is occurring in their buildings. An issue of reprisals, retaliation for folks who do report when they see has been an issue identified. So we need to be sure that policies are dealing with that subject. And, you know, allowing for anonymous reporting, I'm in paragraph 6 here, 5.24, is important, but to flag that something's going on. But in terms of the full-fledged response, it's hard to actually follow through on any discipline or remedial response solely through anonymous reporting. But it is important for folks at least to feel safe to initially contact the adults in the building to let them know something's going on. Then we have some other provisions. You can read for yourself 7, 8, and 9, making sure that community resources are made available, or that children with disabilities, whether they're the target or the actor, have appropriate services provided to them, making sure that new employees are trained in and made aware of the school's policies. Again, we're getting back on paragraph 10 on the top of page 6, some reporting requirements, some analysis, make sure that we're shining some sunlight into the situation that might be going on in a particular school. Section 11 has to do with training, making sure that folks, adults, are well-trained so that they can recognize and respond appropriately. Again, some more detail about some of the characteristics and qualities of training. Then subdivision 5, Mr. Chair, is not a requirement, but it's an encouragement that schools undertake larger efforts to do prevention work and really do more holistic, more comprehensive work within the school. And that's shown to be highly, highly effective. It's not a requirement, but it's an encouragement. And later on in the bill, we'll see, Mr. Chair, the establishment of the Climate Council and the Climate Center at the Department of Education. And those services out of the Department of Education will be well situated to assist schools with implementing the pieces of Subdivision 5 if they so opt. to do that. Subdivision 6 directs the commissioner to establish the state model policy, which schools and school districts can look to. The model policy, of course, would respond to all the qualities and characteristics that we described earlier in the previous subdivisions. And that model policy can be made available as a template. Schools can simply adopt it verbatim if they so like, or use it as a guide to their own deliberations at the local level. And then a few additional requirements for the commissioner in paragraph B, starting on line 7.23, some periodic reviewal to make sure that school districts are adopting policies, making sure that if someone raises the subject to the commissioner, that a school district is not responsive, that there's an opportunity to receive that report and respond to that, you know, making sure that we're not disclosing the names of any individuals who are involved in specific incidents. There's a lot of good reasons for that. Subdivision 7 is just, again, comfort language to make sure we're being very clear. We're not establishing any new private rights of action, nor are we limiting people's current rights to take action on their own behalf. And we're also being very clear in paragraph 3, line 8.9, that persons' rights that are guaranteed under the Constitution to religious expression and free speech continue to be protected. Section 4 is just making sure that in dealing with the new bullying policies that the fair dismissal protections are observed. Section 5 has to do with training and staff development activities and making sure that not just teachers, but count all the support personnel and other folks who are in the building can access adequate training on this subject. Section 6, has to do with training, and this is for other adults who are also in the building who have interaction with students. Section 7 just simply ensures that charter schools are subject to the provisions of this proposal. Section 8 has to do with parental involvement at the Department of Education level and encouraging, this is a part of a couple of provisions that encourage partnerships with parents in establishing positive school climates. That's captured in Section 8, as well as Section 9. Section 9 is an optional item when school districts do have a parental and family involvement policy and a kind of a parent advisory committee that they're taking a look at safe and supportive schools. Section 10 touches on the subject of cyberbullying and the use of the computers, and make sure that that we're also talking about the schools that are being used at the school with internet access. Section 11 establishes the School Climate Council. This is a leadership council that's being established to assist in the work of the Climate Center, which is in the next section. And you can see the membership there involves a number of stakeholders and a number of members of various state agencies, the commissioners or their designees. It's, of course, led by the Department of Education with some minimal requirements for when it convenes, how often it meets, et cetera. Its duties and responsibilities. On line 15.19, you can see the duties, establishments of norms, standards for prevention, et cetera. And then the School Climate Center, Section 12, an initiative that really came about as a result of the keen involvement and attention of the Commissioner of Education in the work of the task force. She attended every single meeting as the Commissioner of Human Rights. It was very, very encouraging to see that high level of interest and leadership in this subject, and they really came up with what I think is a really important initiative to provide upon request to any school the kind of support services that they're looking for to implement, particularly doing some of this larger prevention work. So you can read the duties and responsibilities and some of the details about the climate centers in Section 12 on page 16. Section 13 has to do with kind of a standard enforcement mechanism. I don't think this has ever been invoked ever, but it's an accountability measure having to do with the commissioner's authority with respect to providing resources to schools. Then Section 14 repeals two sections of law that are those 37-word kind of minimal standard bullying statutes that we have on the books right now. And that's my overview, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. And also in our packet, we have the consolidated fiscal note from the department as well as the local impact note from the Minnesota Management and Budget Office. There's also a letter in support from Jake Ross, who will be one of the testifiers. We'll be acting on the A18 following testimony and questions, answers, discussion. At this point, members, I'd like to go to the audience, and we have 13 persons that have signed up to testify in support of the bill, and there are two persons that have expressed to express opposition. We'll take 30 minutes in each time slot for proponents and opponents. For the proponents, I would suggest about 2 minutes each, and we'll probably take you in three or in four to approach the table. So first, we'll go to Ms. Mabry, Mr. Ross, Ms. Schutte, and Lynn Mitchell from the Governor's Task Force. And if any of those individuals could approach, we're ready to hear your testimony. And for all testifiers, for our record, please state your name. And if you represent an organization, that group as well. And you can go in whichever order you prefer. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair Wieger and committee members. My name is Jake Ross, and I'm from Forest Lake. I'm here today to explain to you what happened to me 3 years ago when I was 7 years old. When I was 7 years old and in second grade, I was the victim of ongoing and repeated bullying at the elementary school I then attended. The bullying was done by two students that were in the same class as me. The bullying that happened to me included physical harm, verbal threats, intimidation, and stealing. The physical harm and intimidation that happened to me included that I was hit repeatedly in the hallways and other places in school when my teacher wasn't looking. The boys did this because they thought it was funny. Being hit all the time and laughed at made me feel sad and hurt. These same boys pushed me around on the ground every day when I was waiting at the after-school curbside pickup area in the cafeteria. These boys also took my backpack and other belongings every day while I waited in the school area. I didn't like any of this. This made me feel frustrated, angry, and hurt that I couldn't stop my belongings from being taken from me, and I couldn't keep myself from getting pushed around. One of the worst incidences of when I was physically hurt and threatened was during lunch and recess on February 2nd, 2010. On this day, while I was eating lunch at our assigned classroom table in the cafeteria, one of the bullying students stood up at the lunch table and said very loudly to everyone, "Who's going to help me beat up Jake today?" Then following lunch outside at recess, I was cornered and attacked. I was pushed to the ground repeatedly, up to 20 times. I tried to get away, but I could not. When the recess whistle finally blew and everyone went inside to the school, the student who had attacked me yelled to me repeatedly, "I'm going to kill you if you tell anyone. I'm going to kill you tomorrow." This made me feel scared because I was afraid that he might try to seriously injure me the next day. I was scared about this for many, many more days following this attack. The day after I was attacked at recess, with my mom's encouragement, I switched to the other assigned table I was allowed to sit at to eat my lunch so I would not be by the boy who hurt me. This was the table where all the girls in my class ate. When I switched to the girls' table, the boy who had attacked me and was bullying me said very loudly to everyone, "Look, Jake's turning into a girl. Jake's a girl." This made me feel embarrassed because I was getting teased. I was only trying to get out of harm's way. Having all this bullying and peer abuse happen to me at school made me feel really scared. Going to school was hard for me every day because I didn't know what would happen to me there. My mom was really worried about me at school, too, and tried to help me be safe. My mom came and ate lunch with me and stayed with me at recess to try to keep me safe. I told my mom about the harm that was happening to me at school, and she reported these things to the school officials. The only consequence that happened to the two boys who admitted to hurting me repeatedly was that they had to apologize. No other school consequences occurred, even though the bullying continued through the end of the school year. My mom asked the school director to have the boys who were hurting me be moved to a different assigned table area in the cafeteria because of the bullying happening to me at lunch and recess. The school director told my mom, no, we can't move these boys to another place at lunch because what about those kids they wouldn't let sit by? Because of this, I was forced to sit by the boys who bullied me every day. I constantly had to worry about what they would do to me at lunch and in recess. My mom had a meeting with the school administrators about the bullying that was happening to me. My mom asked to see the school's policy and procedures for bullying. After about 10 minutes of searching, the school director found the school's written bullying policy. This was a couple-sentence statement, but the policy statement did not list any procedures for what to do if bullying occurs. My mom asked about what the school's procedures were for bullying, and she was told by the school director, there are no procedures, no list of consequences for bullying here. At the same meeting with the school director and assistant administrator, my mom asked, how will you ensure a safe learning environment for our son? The answer given to her by the director was, I can't help you. I can't tell you. Not everyone shares the same values as you. Toward the end of the school year, my mom filled out harassment and violence reporting forms for several of the incidences of harm that happened to me this school year, but the school administration did not investigate the incidents. Because this school would not provide a safe learning environment for me, my parents took me and my younger sister out of this school. The following year, my mom and a group of other parents spoke at a school board meeting of the school. This group of parents shared concerns about the bullying at this school. They shared their concern for the lack of clear procedures and consequences for bullying, and they asked the school to provide a code of conduct booklet, which would clearly explain consequences for bullying. Even after this group of parents asked for bullying prevention procedures to be put in place at the school board and the administration did not want to make any changes to their school's policies, saying they did not need this at their school. Chair Wieger and committee members, I'm hoping that you will vote in favor of the Safe and Supportive Minnesota Schools Act, because right now students like me are still going through the pain of bullying. We all like happy endings, and right now, you have the power to make this end happily. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jake.
Good morning, Chair Wieger and committee members. My name is Nikki Mabry. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you. I am the Associate Director of Policy at Outfront Minnesota. Our mission is to create a state where lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people are free to be who they are, love who they love, and live without fear of violence, harassment, or discrimination. For the past 25 years, we have been delivering programs and services focused on the areas of community organizing, public policy, anti-violence, and legal advocacy. The Safe Schools for All Coalition was established in 2009, and we were one of its founders. At that time, we started working on safe schools legislation, which was passed by both the House and Senate with strong bipartisan support. In the House, 95 to 39, and in the Senate, 46 to 8. But Governor Tim Pawlenty vetoed that bill. Nevertheless, the coalition stayed together and continued its work, and today we have more than 80 partners. We are very excited about the work of, of Governor Dayton's task force on the prevention of school bullying. Members researched school policies all across the nation and talk to people throughout our state. Educators, parents, students, and concerned citizens shared their experiences and also their ideas to make our schools safer and protect all students. The bill includes enumerated protections. And as the Supreme Court of the United States has explained, enumeration is the essential device used to make the duty not to discriminate concrete and to provide guidance for those who must comply. In Rummer v. Evans, 1996. The bill also includes clear definitions of bullying, harassment, and intimidation that Senator Dibble has discussed. It also calls for training and resources for students, staff, and parents on bullying prevention and intervention. The bill will also establish a school climate center within the Department of Education. Thank you, Chair Wieger, for the opportunity to speak with you today and for putting this bill forward. We believe that it will become one of the most effective anti-bullying laws in the nation. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Mabry, Ms. Schutte.
Good morning, Chairman Wieger and committee members. My name is Kirsten Schuett, and I would first like to thank you for allowing me to speak with you this morning. When I was at Anoka High School, I was relentlessly bullied for being who I am. It was during my sophomore year when things took a turn for the worst. On a choir field trip to Wisconsin, my phone was taken and private pictures of my girlfriend and I were shared with other students. When I confided this to my teacher, she shifted the blame to me instead of my harassers. Her response is that if I didn't want people to see my photos, then they shouldn't have been on my phone in the first place. I spent a sleepless night listening to the judgmental whispers of the other choir members talking about me and the constant buzzing of cell phones sharing the next slanderous text message. After pushing through a subpar choir performance, we finally went home. All I could think about was how I could face everybody at school the next day. As soon as I walked through the school doors that next morning, it was obvious that those messages hadn't just stayed within the choir group. The looks cut like daggers and the not-so-subdued whispers were deafening. I walked through the halls, suddenly feeling ashamed about who I was. Once in the choir room, my teacher began talking about an incident that had occurred on the trip and how drama would not be tolerated. I initially felt a spark of hope, though it was quickly extinguished when we sat in a healing circle that quickly turned into a homophobic rant. While I believe that my teacher had the best of intentions, the circle just added more fuel to the fire. Throughout the next 2 years, things became increasingly unbearable. After being verbally, physically, and emotionally harassed and threatened almost every day, I became completely overwhelmed. Not only did my grades suffer because I was more concerned about what the bullies sitting next to me might be plotting, but I also frequently missed school out of fear of what might happen. I still vividly remember an incident where I was outside the school waiting to be picked up, and an upperclassman whom I had never seen before threw Gatorade at me and called me a sinner. When I went to my administration, the response was much the same as it always was, that I should just lay low and not flaunt my sexuality and that they would look into it. Home wasn't even an escape from the ruthless bullying. I would constantly receive threats via Facebook and horrendous emails and text messages, and I felt utterly hopeless. My senior year, I became a social outcast. At a time when my peers were making college plans and creating wonderful memories, I was relentlessly ostracized. For me, that was almost worse than the constant harassment. Ultimately, things became so bad that I ended up dropping out of high school. I felt completely alone and ashamed, and I attempted suicide. Well, in the adolescent wing of the hospital over an 8-day span, I discovered that I wasn't the only person there that was struggling with bullying and self-acceptance. So many bright young people were there that couldn't see the value that they possessed and had felt just as worthless as I had. It was an eye-opening experience for me. After receiving treatment and a lot of talking through my situation, I was finally able to realize that I had been blessed with a second chance, and that's a chance that so many others would never have, and a chance that would help me make a difference. This bill is something that will impact every single Minnesota student. As an older sister, this is particularly important to me. I don't want my siblings to go to school and feel like they aren't safe and supported as they pursue their education. I want them and every student to be able to go to school and prom and walk with their fellow classmates to get their diploma. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to have those memories as I completed my high school diploma online. Today, we have an opportunity to create a social change with this bill. Had something like this been in place when I was going to school, I believe my outcome would have been different. My teachers might have been more educated on how to best intervene and how to appropriately handle perpetual bullying incidents like mine. My mother could have benefited from the available resources that might have helped our struggling relationship. Unfortunately, I'll never know how a bill like this could have helped me or how many now lost lives it could have saved. But I am sitting here in front of you today asking you to think for a moment about a student that you know, your siblings or your own children, and how they might someday be protected by this bill. Let's work together to make sure that they never have to go through the things that I and so many others had to when they were in school. Chairman Wieger and committee members, thank you so much for your time and allowing me to share my story with you this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Schutt. The next three testifiers, Lynn Mitchell, Jody Manning, Valerie Doslin, and we have 18 minutes remaining for the proponents.
Mr. Chair, we have Dr. Tom Scott, who we'd like to speak in Lynn Mitchell's place. Thank you.
Okay.
Chair Wieger and committee members, my name is Tom Scott, and I would like to thank you for this opportunity of speaking with you today. I'm a developmental and behavioral pediatrician. I've been a member of the Governor's Task Force on the Prevention of School Bullying, and I'm representing today the Minnesota chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, an organization of 900 pediatricians throughout the state. So I'd like to encourage each of you to support the Safe and Supportive Schools Act to prevent bullying, harassment, intimidation, and cyberbullying of students in Minnesota. This is a very important measure that we feel will be strong and effective in keeping students safe and creating environments for them to be successful in school. In my clinical work as a pediatrician, I've specialized in children and adolescents with autism, and I know firsthand their experience being bullied, having difficulty responding, and their parents' frustrations when bullying isn't acknowledged or dealt with in school. I've also cared for lesbian and gay students who have been bullied and harassed and who needed more school protections and supports. It's been well established that bullying can result in school absenteeism, decreased academic performance, and increased dropout rates. In my pediatric work, I've seen health issues emerge, such as sleep problems, depression, and anxiety. Some students who are bullied sustain bodily injuries, and bullying can be a precipitating factor in youth suicides. My pediatric colleagues and I are particularly concerned about student safety, the need for students to be safe psychologically and physically in order for them to succeed academically. Last summer, when the governor's task force on the prevention of school bullying convened listening sessions throughout the state, we spent time in Bemidji, St. Cloud, Duluth, Rochester, Mankato, and the metro area. Students spoke about how much bullying is happening and how little awareness adults have about the magnitude of the problem. Many students are also concerned that adults are indifferent to this issue. They're especially troubled by the extent of bullying on the school bus and on the internet, even during school hours. Students also describe the complexity of bullying, noting that conflicts or abusive behaviors at home may reemerge at school. They also reported with appreciation the benefits of school programs, where they learn conflict resolution and cultural diversity skills. Students told us about the importance of their being involved in the preventive process, including participation in leadership roles. Teachers and administrators remind us that they can't do it alone, and that parents and community members are integral participants in the process. All school staff members and volunteers need to be trained in anti-bias education, bullying policies, and procedures. We also need data collection that will be useful to schools locally, as well as for policy analysis centrally. When bullying does occur, formative discipline and remedial measures are essential so students can succeed. We can and we must do better by our children. Mr. Chairman and committee members, the Minnesota chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics encourages to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Scott.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Jody Manning, and I'm testifying in my role as coordinator of PACER's Parent Training and Information Center. On a more personal note, I'm also the parent of a 26-year-old son with disabilities. This personal note is important to my testimony because, like my son Ryan, students who are vulnerable to bullying because of their differences are the inspiration for my work on bullying prevention. PACER Center, as you may know, is a Minnesota-based nonprofit formed in 1978 to help parents understand special ed laws and to provide support to parents. I, too, benefited from the support of PACER services when my son was in school and 9 years ago was lucky enough to be employed by PACER Center. PACER initiated the National Bullying Prevention Center in 2006 after receiving many heartbreaking calls from parents about their children with disabilities being involved in bullying situations. I personally receive hundreds of those calls every year and speak to hundreds of those parents regarding those situations. PACER's bullying prevention efforts are noteworthy because they support all students, including those with disabilities, along with their families, schools, and communities. We are working to create a paradigm shift in society's views about bullying. Instead of seeing bullying as an accepted behavior or a natural part of childhood, we need to understand that bullying has a significant impact on the lives of children. PACER supports this bill. In the recommendations of the dedicated task force, you can hear the voices of Minnesotans who have been affected by bullying and those who care deeply about the safety of Minnesota children. With this bill, PACER now has the opportunity to pass one of the most positive, impactful, and influential bullying prevention laws in the country. We can move towards creating an environment that keeps all students, including those with disabilities, not only safe from harmful behavior, but surrounded by an atmosphere of acceptance of differences, kindness towards others, and inclusion of all. PACER's motto is, "The end of bullying begins with me." We hope that you will adopt the same motto. Thank you for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Manning. Our next group will be Ann Geddes, Christina Wagner, and Anthony Newby. We have about 10 minutes left for proponents. Welcome.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Christina Wagner, and I'm here today to share my story with you. It all started in sixth grade. I only had one male figure to look up to in my life, and that was my big brother, Joe. I changed my style to match his. I went from being the typical pretty girly girl to what was considered skater or punk. While I thought this was the coolest thing in the whole world, my peers were less than accepting. I went into sixth grade with many friends, but within a few months, they were all gone. The boys in my grade decided to give me a nickname based on my new appearance. Eventually, everybody caught on. All the boys, all the girls, people I didn't even know. I remember hearing it in the hallways, followed by cruel laughter and harsh stares. I remember getting picked for class activities, but instead of hearing my own name, I heard the one that they had given me. I remember my peers and even my teachers seeing it happen and seeing the effect it had on me, but chose to do and say nothing. This name I was given categorized me as a cutter, or someone who self-harmed themselves. Emo. For those 6 months, I had never even considered doing such a horrible thing. But because of their cruelty, on November 11th, 2008, they had completely stripped me of my identity, and I became exactly what they wanted me to be. From there, things didn't get easier. In eighth grade, I was reported for harassment by my best friend when I chose to end the friendship because I wasn't being treated fairly. It was brought up that my friend developed self-harm issues, which the school blamed me for. At the time, I was too scared to tell them I had been doing those same horrible things for 3 years and would never want anyone else to do it. The school was quick to tell me the horrible person I was and the horrible things I never really did. Not once was I asked for my side. I was just accused. I was bullied by my peers and even the staff. The torture of my classmates has never stopped. Being a sophomore in high school, it still continues. Even this year, going to the store with a few friends turned into being called horrible names and having food thrown at me. No matter how many times I tell an adult, no one seems to care. To this day, I have been forced to face the following. Horrible rumors such as, I make people want to kill themselves. I was going to jail for harassment. Rumors of my sexuality, which were completely false. I've been called every name you could possibly think of. I've received anonymous messages and threats telling me that I ruin lives and the world would be better off without me. I have been humiliated, insulted, and tortured through social media. I watch my performance in school drop. I'm left with no self-esteem to the point of developing an eating disorder. A 95-pound girl is unable to look into the mirror and see the pretty, skinny girl everyone else sees. I have thought of ending my own life, as so many individuals have suggested. I have been ripped apart piece by piece. But worst of all, I fear these things will follow me for the rest of my life, all because the school decided to turn the other way. I want and deserve to be safe in my school, and you have the power to make everyone safe in their schools. Mr. Chairman and committee members, thank you for allowing me to speak with you today.
Thank you, Christina. You touched us.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Ann Geddes. My husband and I live in a rural area south of the cities. It is where we raised our four children, Jonathan, Jeremiah, Rachel, and Rania. Our kids went to a small school in a nearby small town. Early in their school years, I began to overhear about bullying, especially directed towards Jeremiah, our second oldest. When I would ask him about it, he would beg me not to call the school. He said it would just get worse, and so I usually didn't. The bullying got worse in middle school, and when Jeremiah was in 10th grade, he and his siblings decided to transfer to a charter school in another town. We had hoped that he would make new friends there and there would be no bullying. However, that wasn't the case. He was bullied there just as badly, and I realize now that his self-esteem had been so beaten down that it made him an easy target. He was also desperate for friends, and kids took advantage of that. Probably the worst incident that I was aware of was when some kids duct-taped Jeremiah like a mummy so he couldn't move his arms and legs. They took off his shoes and pushed him down a snow-covered hill outside of the school. At this new school, we were told that Jeremiah needed to learn to stand up for himself. I'm sure this did more harm than good, making him feel even more like a loser because he couldn't stand up for himself. The teachers decided to try peer mediation, which I now understand is not appropriate for bullying situations. That's for conflicts, and bullying is abuse, peer abuse, not a conflict. Jeremiah went to the peer mediation, and he later told me as he was walking out of the session that one of his tormentors whispered in his ear, "I'm going to kill you." It was after this incident Jeremiah quit school, and he was in 11th grade. We had hoped that with Jeremiah being away from the bullying at school, he would heal from the damage that had been done to his self-esteem. But ultimately, the despair and pain became unbearable for Jeremiah. And on October 22nd, 2006, ended his life behind our pole barn. He was 21 years old. He wrote that he no longer wanted to live in a world where people were so cruel. He also wrote several pages describing the bullying he endured and how it made him feel, stating that it left him with no self-esteem and feeling like a loser. After recently receiving my master's degree in community psychology with a focus on bullying prevention, we created a nonprofit called Jeremiah's Hope for Kindness, through which we do bullying prevention work. I also became a trainer for the OVEA's Bullying Prevention Program. Jeremiah is only one of many youth who have taken their lives after enduring unspeakable pain and humiliation of being bullied. And then there are the countless youth who continue to suffer horribly from this abuse. The lasting and far-reaching effects of bullying on individuals, families, schools, and communities are beyond what I have time to discuss today, but know that they are extensive and grave. I believe that my son's unbearable pain and despair was preventable. I believe if there had been a bullying prevention plan that included training for staff and students, time for class discussions, parent and community involvement, and a team to oversee it all established in my son's school, he would still be with us. When Jeremiah was being bullied back in the 90s, we didn't know what we know today about bullying and prevention. Today, there is no excuse. We now understand the tragic effects of bullying. We also know what works to prevent it. We have best practices. Schools that use best practices with fidelity do over time see bullying decrease. This bill will help ensure that schools employ effective strategies to address and prevent bullying, which will mean our kids will learn better and will more likely be able to live happy, healthy, caring, and competent lives. Our kids deserve no less. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I encourage you to support the Safe and Supportive Minnesota Schools Act. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, Ms. Geddes, sharing Jeremiah's hope. For proponents, we have 3 minutes left, and I'll let Senator Dibble and kind of coordinate how he'd like to close with those proponents for testimony.
So, Mr. Chair, I think proponents in the classic sense have concluded we have folks who are representing stakeholders Kind of supportive. I don't know.
Yeah, if any of the groups would like to come to the table now to share their endorsement, now would be the time. We'll start Ms. Doslin and others. Please join her. Ms. Doslin.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Valerie Doslin, and I represent the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, more commonly known as the school superintendents. We want to thank Senator Dibble and the members of the legislature for addressing this very difficult topic, and we applaud the efforts. We also want to thank Senator Dibble and the members of the legislature for listening to our concerns and making some very significant changes to the bill. So I want to assure you that the MASA is dedicated to helping school superintendents around the state implement the requirements of this statute. We do just want to bring up the fact that the requirements of the statute do require additional resources. Some of the expectations in the statute are, I think the one that's most noticeable and different from what districts are doing currently, is that all staff, volunteers, and students must be trained annually on not only the school district policy, but on restoration practices and remedial efforts to try to reduce the incidences of bullying. And we agree with that effort and don't disagree. This will take resources because it takes time. Resources and staff and funding, and it has to be done annually. And while I think the difference now is that all staff have to be trained, school bus drivers, janitors, school food service workers, librarians, all staff, whereas the practice may not have been that broadly distributed throughout school districts in the past. So thank you.
Thank you. We have 1 minute.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kirk Stein. I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. I just want to point out this bill has taken a path that has provided some opportunities for change, and there have been some very positive changes to this bill. The clarity of the definition has been improved. The detailed inclusion of student-to-student behavior is also been clarified. The addition of materially and substantially to the bill is an important piece, so administrators and teachers aren't chasing every single incident. The clearly definition of the harassment and bullying piece has also been an improvement to the bill, and the fact that the overview or the review by the Department of Education of every policy, I think, is a very positive piece to allow the board some pieces on that. But I think I just want to reiterate what Ms. Doslin talked about is the practicality of this on the ground for districts in terms of training. And I think we understand the importance and the value of this. MSBA had a model policy drafted in 2003. The state law came in 2005. The state law was amended again in 2007 while we worked with the Attorney General to make sure it was a comprehensive cyberbullying bill. But the piece, there will be cost drivers to this piece in terms of the annual training requirement that goes along with this, the collection and the remedial practices, which will require training for the staff. And so I think rather than reiterate what Ms. Doslin emphasized from the superintendent's perspective, I think those are the pieces that need to be recognized. And I think the fiscal note on the local impact note identify those cost drivers as well.
Okay, we'll take 1 minute statements from the two remaining testifiers, and for opponents, we'll add 2 minutes for their allocation of time. Mr. Aronson.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and the Secondary Principals Associations. And I do want to say in my 1 minute that we do appreciate that Senator Dibble has been very flexible in incorporating many of the changes that we've brought in here. This has been a developmental bill. I think it's become kind of everyone's bill now. It started out as a particular group, but now as everybody's got some changes in here, we're very happy. It's continuing to develop as we go along. One of the things that, as we've looked at it closer, and we'd like you to look at, is on page 10 in the staff development outcomes section, there's a requirement of annual training of all school employees. And I know that the idea was to get people's attention on annual training. That might be a lot more than you need. We might not need to train the cooks and the janitors and we'd like to work with the committee and with Senator Dibble just to modify that and help on the cost drivers. But overall, I want to say that it is to the senator's credit that as this is rolled along, in that Ms. Dozeland and Mr. Schneiderwin and I now end up on the proponent list testifying about this bill, and that took a lot of work to get us this far, and I think he's entitled to your kudos for that. Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Aronson, and finally, for proponents, Ms. Coyle.
Thank you. My name is Jill Coyle, and I'm the general counsel for the Rosemont-Apple Valley-Eagan School District. Also worked with the school district on policy development for our own bullying policy. I also thank Senator Dibble for the excellent modifications to the bill as it's gone along. It's addressed a number of the school district's concerns in terms of the practicality of its implementation. I do still have just four concerns that I want to bring to your attention today, and I'll go through them quickly as I know time is short. I still have some concerns about the breadth of the definition of bullying. The definition of bullying in the newly proposed bill is much tighter than it was before, and I appreciate that. I'm still concerned, though, that it sweeps in many bad acts that occur in a school district that don't necessarily rise to the level of bullying. Those bad acts are already dealt with school district discipline policies and the Minnesota Pupil Fair Dismissal Act. I would suggest looking at tightening the bullying definition even more by adding a requirement that there be a power imbalance between bully and victim, and also require an element of being repeated. Those are elements that are included in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services website. They have a website called stopbullying.gov, and those elements are there, and I believe would tighten up the bullying definition. I'd also like
Ms. Quill, we need to wrap up, and you know, this is time for the proponents and your critiquing. You could go into the opponent part if you'd like to use that time. But members, we need to recess at the call of the chair. It'll probably be about 10 minutes. A couple of us need to go to Finance Committee, and we'll return in approximately 10 minutes, and then we'll hear from opponents. We have Angela Shaughnessy and I believe Tom Pritchard, and we'll have 32 minutes in that time frame. And we're recessed at the call of the chair. It is 9:40 a.m. We're continuing our hearing on Senator Dibble's bill on Safe and Supportive Minnesota Schools Act, Senate File 783. We have heard from proponents, and now we have approximately 30 minutes for opponents on the proposed legislation. We have signed up Angela Shaughnessy and Tom Pritchard. So welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Angela Shaughnessy, and first of all, Mr. Chairman and committee members, I would like to thank you for allowing me the time to talk to you today, and I would also like to thank you for your service to our Minnesota state government. Without you, I mean, we need you, and we do appreciate all that you put into your job, so I wanted to make sure that I said that before I said anything else.
Thank you.
I am here to testify against Senate File 783. Now, I am not a politically savvy person. I have no backing. I have no group. I have no coalition. It is just me and, you know, coming to talk to you because I can't stay silent on this anymore, and I just feel like common sense is flying out the window on some of these issues. And I've talked with, you know, probably hundreds of people over the last weeks, but nobody else even knew about this, and I managed to know about it, and so I'm here to talk to you. We all agree that bullying is bad. Everyone agrees that it needs to be stopped and prevented. We have all been touched by bullying in some way. Having been bullied myself as a kid, I am definitely passionate about kids treating each other with respect and dignity. But this bill does not have all the answers. The fiscal note says it will cost schools and ultimately taxpayers $26 million a year for schools to implement and comply with this. In addition, we are now spending $1 million a year to pay for a school climate center. And even though the bill has been amended to remove the unconstitutional application for private schools, the bill is still fatally flawed. I have to ask, why are we spending $26 million a year on a redundancy of policies and enforcements? And actually, I had no idea you'd be in the room today, Senator, but in our conversation last week, Senator Hoffman was talking about how the schools are already spending this money and doing these things, which actually makes my point that this is a redundancy. And it's already at a time when budgets are so stretched and contentious. And at this point, I have not even mentioned the school climate control or the school climate center or policing agency. And why do we need to spend another $1 million a year to fund another layer of bureaucracy? This enormous amount of spending is wasteful and detracts from spending on the actual education of our students that they need in order to compete. Has anyone thought of the educational improvements we could make if we took that $26 million and applied it to our schools in a different manner? Why should we also spend $26 million to call out specific forms of bullying, such as race, ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation, gender identity and expression, etc.? By naming these specifics, you are now elevating certain issues above others. You also put the schools in the position of having to teach specifics into those specific issues. Why aren't we naming kids who speak with a lisp, or who got their period too late, or too early, or the promiscuous girls? Aren't any of these kids deserving of enough protection to have made the list? Why isn't bullying on publicly expressing a political opinion covered, like the 11-year-old girl who recently received death threats and verbal attacks after giving her testimony on the marriage laws? And I think of even the couple of the people who have testified today. They aren't specifically called out and named in here. They are due the rights as well. So if we're going to spend $26 million a year, why don't we make it general and include everyone in every class of kids? Why aren't we saying that we just don't tolerate bullying in any form for any reason? It's that simple. Quite frankly, why aren't we even just saying we expect all of our children to treat everyone with respect and dignity? No exceptions, period. The fact of the matter is this. The less you define something, the more you can encompass. While the bill states that this is not an exclusive list, it does by elevating only certain bases for bullying to this itemized list, you have now minimized the bullying that takes place because of a myriad of other unlisted causes. We need to outlaw the behavior of bullying, period, regardless of what it's based on. Again, we all oppose bullying. I oppose bullying. I was bullied as a kid. It's wrong. It needs to be stopped. But the heart of the matter is that even though the unconstitutional portion of the bill was amended, it's still bad for our schools. It creates wasteful and redundant spending, as well as another enforcement bureaucracy. It elevates certain types of bullying over others, and it essentially takes dollars away from an already stretched budget that could be used instead to elevate the level of education our students receive to make them better on a global scale. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Shaughnessy. Mr. Pritchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Pritchard, President of the Minnesota Family Council, and I'm here to speak in opposition to the bill. First, I want to say clearly we oppose bullying in all shapes and forms that it occurs, but we feel that this bill goes far beyond that. We also appreciate that Senator Dibble has eliminated the application to private schools. We think that is a positive, but there's still a number of provisions which cause us to still strongly oppose the bill. And I just wanted to go through some of those reasons. First, in lines 2.25, it requires the schools to monitor student communications, not just in schools and school events, but whenever students might be communicating with one another, basically when they're at home, in the privacy of their room. 24/7, in a sense, this bill applies to those student communications. Second concern, it's been already noted that this is an immensely costly, to my knowledge, unfunded mandate on public schools to the extent of $26 million a year. That's a lot of money. Third concern, while there's been improvement to the definition, there are still areas where that needs to be clarified. It was noted the repetitious events should be included, as well as there's no definition for harassing in line 3.30. And we think that needs to have a definition so school officials know what it is they're supposed to be enforcing. Fourth concern is this gives special attention and protection to at least 19 groups and societies, including sexual orientation, gender identity, and expression. That's in line 4.112. In a sense, this gives special protections based on a limited number of characteristics. It focuses on the characteristics of the victim rather than the bad behavior of the bully. We think all forms of bullying should be addressed, not just given certain ones given special focus or attention. Fifth concern, in line 5.12, it says that parents of students who are either bullied or are the bullier, it's the discretion of the school whether or not those parents will be notified. We think those parents should be notified. The presumption should be in favor of parents being involved in these incidences involving their students, whether as the bullier, accused bullier, or the bullied student. Because this has significant ramifications. A student could be disciplined or subject to re-education, training, and other things without the parent's knowledge. And we think parents need to be involved in the process. Section 9, it talks about parental involvement, but at the most critical point, parents are not involved. Or it's up to the school, and we think that shouldn't that discretion shouldn't be there. It should be the presumption should be in favor of the parent being involved. Sixth concern involves data practices. In line 5.9, it talks about the schools accumulating this data on reports, incidences, and so forth. But there's no discussion on how long this data will be held. Can it be reviewed? Can a student challenge it if they feel it's inaccurate? Because down the road, a student could be applying for a job, and when their school records are made available to future employers, they could see an incident or alleged incident of this student being involved in bullying. And we think that is a big problem and a big hole in this bill. A seventh concern is that this bill goes far beyond bullying to require students to, quote, prevent and reduce discrimination and other improper conduct. Well, what are those? What is that discrimination? What is that improper conduct? That's in 9.6.25, so there's no discussion of that. And that's where we have concerns about the breadth of this bill. It goes far beyond bullying. And finally, we have concerns about the Climate Center. Will it be used as a tool to reshape attitudes and values of school-aged children, not just address bullying, but reshape the beliefs of students on a wide range of subjects, including family structure and sexuality? So those are just some of our concerns. Again, I reiterate, we oppose bullying and think we can address that, but we believe that this bill goes far beyond that. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Pritchard, we still have about 15 minutes or so for opponents to the bill. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the committee? If not, we've been addressing the A18 amendment, and to put it in form for a vote, Senator Johnson moves the A18 amendment. Discussion. Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. We now have Senate File 783 as amended. Senator Dibble. Closing remarks or questions first, if anyone has questions of the author. Senator Dinkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Dibble. Earlier in your comments, you talked about how you had interviewed several students, parents, and I was just curious. I don't know that you could give me this today, but I would appreciate to get it to me in the next day or so if you'd be willing to do that. I'd kind of like to know the number of students that you interviewed and where those folks are from, and the number of parents and their locations, and also if you interviewed superintendents, I'd kind of like to know what communities these folks were from. If you could do that for me, I would appreciate it.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rose Hermitson from the Department of Education, who helped to staff the Governor's Task Force on the Prevention of Bullying. And Senator Dames, you can see for yourself on the Department of Education website where all of the documents and activities of the task force are published. There's some significant description of all the activities and all the listening sessions and all the hearings. But for the time being, perhaps Ms. Hermanson can help us understand the extent of the activities that we undertook as a task force.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rose Hermanson, Minnesota Department of
Follow up,
excuse
Chair.
Me, Senator Dames, and then we'll proceed.
To follow up, Senator Dibble. So the people that you're referring to that you interviewed, the students, parents, and stuff, that was through the study group? Is that what I'm being told?
Mr. Chair, I never said that I personally interviewed students. I said we spoke with and met with and heard from a whole variety of people, including students and faculty and staff and business leaders and community leaders and et cetera.
And, Mr. Chair, follow-up. And that was through the study group. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, I've been involved in this issue for a very, very long time. So I've certainly had a lot of contact and a lot of discussion over the course of many years with a lot of students and a lot of teachers and a lot of support personnel and a lot of other sorts of professionals and parents over the years. I'm not going to document all of those for you because I couldn't possibly. However, in my testimony, I was referring to the work of the task force.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd just like to reiterate what Senator Dibble indicated. We put almost all of our materials on the website, and they're available for people to see. We did, from the listening sessions, and I think Dr. Scott earlier indicated the different cities that we had gone to, we did take notes. Those notes in summary form I can make available, but we went to many different cities. In some instances, we had listening sessions for the parents, and then we had listening sessions separately for the students. Others, they were combined. Many times, we'd have to open up a couple of rooms because we had too big of a group for one, and many of the members of the task force, including Lynn Mitchell, who was here, Dr. Scott, they all participated in those listening sessions. So I have those notes somewhere, but they are on summary form on the website.
Further questions? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, just a quick question. Once in a while, regrettably, sometimes, kids are kids and there are statements made and it's maybe a one-time incidence and what have you. Where in the bill does it say give this some latitude to school districts to differentiate between some of those type of occurrences and what is a, continual series of events that really leads to a bullying situation?
So, Mr. Chair, there is no prescriptive no prescription in the bill around exactly how a school district responds to a single incident or repeated incidences of bullying. We really do leave that to local determination. So I can't point specifically in the bill to where we either prevent or mandate a particular response, be it a disciplinary or remedial response. We really do leave that to local districts and school boards to determine for themselves.
Further questions? Senator Hall?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, who initially is asking for this bill? Is it teachers? Is it students? Is it parents? Is it all of them? Are you getting?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I would say the answer to Senator Hall's question is yes, all of them. Of course, we hear the most compelling testimony, the most compelling nature of our requests are from students and their parents.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, how does this relate to the kids when they're playing sports? In sports, there's a lot of intimidation. There's a lot of certainly physical harm at times, swearing at each other. How does this harassing somebody, how does that work with sports events?
So, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, a simple application of common sense, making sure that, coaches who are often teachers themselves, are teaching rules of fair play and sportsmanship and good character and the like. That's what athletics are intended to actually achieve. If you look to the definitions of what bullying is. Making sure that
the bullying that we're talking about, you know, rises to the materially and substantially interference with a student's educational opportunities, et cetera. So I don't see any really intersection in you know, normal athletic competition and what would rise to the level of bullying.
Sarah Hall.
Can you give me, or maybe in the bill, I've not been able to read the whole bill yet. Are there words? I'm trying to get to when is somebody being harassed? You know, if I were, be it in a athletic competition or at school, I want to know where the line is. Are there words that you cannot use? And are there words that you can use? Do we have that down?
So,
Mr. Chair, it's not the goal of the bill to be that prescriptive. So we don't have a list of words. That just wouldn't be practical in any sense. But Senator Hall, I would just again refer you to line 3.29. Subdivision 3, where we provide for definitions. Intimidating, threatening, abusive, or harassing conduct that is objectively offensive, and it's important, operative word, and then, you know, causes harm, et cetera. You know, in the next four paragraphs, paragraph 2, 3, and 4, materially and substantially disrupts the work and discipline of the school. So really, Mr. Chair, it's not about what people say in a literal sense, but what the intent and what the consequence is of behavior that's directed at individuals.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Dibble. So I am trying to find the balance here between somebody that would tease and when that becomes a violation. In the terms intimidating, threatening, abusive, harassing, who decides that? Is it the one that was offended or the offender? Because if the offender says something and, you know, that's just part of his language, you know, I hear people say the F word all the time. And it's directed at me or somebody else. And I think, you know, that's just the way you talk, and I feel bad for you. But if I wanted to say, that's harassing, is it my determination? Theirs? Do we have a court that decides this? And what if on line 3.33, what if somebody says something to me and it hurts my feelings and I go home and cut myself? Is that causing physical harm? And thus, they can be charged. And then my last question is, what happens to somebody, and I'm sure it's in here, if they're charged with bullying? And what happens to the school? What if they do it two or three or four times? Is there a greater charge? Do they ever end up going to jail? Or being imprisoned in any way as a youth? Or is it just they don't get to go to school? Are they, you know, I don't know. I'm sure it's in here, but I haven't read it.
Senator
Mr. Chair, Senator Hall, no, it's not in here. We don't create new crimes. We don't classify, we don't outlaw bullying, and that sort of thing. I mean, they're you know, plenty of laws on the books that deal with offenses that rise to those levels, and school districts are tasked with and charged with responding when things rise to that level. So we don't need to address those issues in this bill. As far as your getting to your first question, who determines? That's the work and the task of the adults in the building, the professionals. Who are equipped with the responsibility for identifying bullying, if they see it or if it's reported to them, and then conducting an investigation, figuring out what exactly happened, and then, you know, tailoring the response
you know, to suit the nature of the issue. You know, sometimes it's a minor matter. And throughout the bill, you'll find an emphasis not on on punitive responses or discipline. And matter of fact, we don't even use the word bullier in the bill anywhere, because labeling kids would be a real problem. I probably it's fair to say that many young people have engaged in some form of bullying. Sometimes very minor, sometimes not so minor. Even the targets of bullying have themselves engaged. It's about emotional development and guidance and supervision and teaching. Kids engage in bullying behavior not because they're bad kids or they have malicious intent necessarily. Sometimes it's a matter of emotional development, of modeling, of adult interaction or lack thereof, frontal lobe decision-making development, lack of empathy, those sorts of things. And so the bill tries to be very holistic and intentional and measured in its approach so that we're actually emphasizing appropriate response with the goal of remediation, redirection, and prevention.
Senator Hall, followed by Senator Hoffman and Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dibble, I appreciate what you're trying to do here. I think everybody has probably witnessed bullying, maybe done some ourselves. I've seen it from students. I've seen it from teachers bullying kids. In my own life, I can remember being dragged on the gym floor by my scarf by the gym teacher to his office and then thrown up against the locker. I might have deserved it. I won't go into that. But did he actually have a right to do that? He did in those days or whatever else they did. But I do think there are issues here that there have been a lot of them. Mr. Pritchard had some. Some of the superintendents and principals association had others that they were concerned about. Are you going to deal with some of those issues, or do you like the bill just the way it is?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hall, I think everyone acknowledged that the bill has appropriately undergone what we call the legislative process, and changes have been made along the way as good ideas and critiques have come in. I just received one from Ms. Coyle that I think is a really good idea, around investigations and not concluding an investigation but starting an investigation within a few days. Seems like a realistic and reasonable change. So absolutely, Senator Hall, I can't say which ones with precision right now, but I think every stop along the way we've made really, really good adjustments to the bill.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, this bill is long overdue, and I thank you for adding me as a co-author at the very beginning of this. And having spent 8 years on a school board and seeing numerous school districts not have good policy in place, you have lots of guidance that are out there from different organizations. But finally, for the first time, we're looking at something that gives good governance so that we can make the right decisions locally that are going to protect every child. Anytime a child is kept from receiving free public education, we started this year with this Article 13, Title 13 in our state's constitution, which is the fair or the uniform and standard education, which really, when you look at it, it's free public education. It's a constitutional right. When you deny a child based upon a characteristic or you're keeping them from going to school, like one of the testifiers said, we are, in a sense, denying that free public education. And this is really going to give some teeth in the game. That's going to really allow us to finally governance and make sure that every child has that free public education. So, Senator Dibble, I just want to tell you, I'm glad to be part of this bill and know that members, I think we should support this and really start to put in place some good things for our school districts.
Senator Torres-Ray, followed by Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Dibble, I wanted to thank you for giving us the opportunity to engage in a very important conversation. I think that you have been just really an extraordinary champion for this issue, and I happen to be a parent of two adolescents who constantly bring their friends home and have conversations and exchange messages that I am not very proud of, and I have worked very hard to educate them about these issues, and I happen to have a very diverse group of friends who interact with my kids quite often. And even though I have tried very hard, I think that kids can be mean. And I feel that the conversation many times is very demeaning, especially when it comes to sexual orientation. Kids can be very cruel. And I have been paying close attention to the conversations you're having in the community about these issues. And this is a tremendous accomplishment. But I also wanted to commend you for the conversations that you have opened in the public around this issue, on how important they are for our own kids, and how much you have educated the community. And in particular, I want to give thanks to the people who came to testify. Learning about Jeremiah was a very painful thing for me. Ms. Geddes, thank you so much for coming to tell us your story. I cry with you every time you testify. Thank you for coming to us and testify time and time again, sharing your tears and your story. This has been very moving for me. And the same thing for Christina. You are amazing. And to bring your story here and to grab all of that experience and come over here and share that with us, that's just an amazing thing. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And, Senator, thank you for opening that opportunity here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to come at this with a slightly different but similar perspective. I really appreciate this. And my view comes as PTA president in that sort of unique role. You work with parents, teachers, and administrators. And I have been involved in really well-meaning, caring professionals struggle without tools. And I think this goes a long way to provide some of those tools. And it is much needed. And Minnesota has long been a leader in education in so many different aspects. And the 37 words that we've had is inadequate, and it doesn't do the job. And it doesn't give our schools and these very caring professionals what they need, and the parents. And a lot of resources are already being spent. Frustrating cycle with the lack of those tools. So let's help provide. Let's give that guidance. Let's give that structure. Thank you for doing this.
Further discussion. Senator Pratt, followed by Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
You know, I want to, first of all, I want to thank Mr. Ross, Ms. Schutte, and Ms. Wagner for their testimony, and Ms. Geddes as well. The stories are heartbreaking, and as a member of a school board for 12 years, I beat you by four.
Thank you.
I certainly understand that. I've taken the calls from parents and students around this issue, and we've worked through it. And I can tell you that on our school board, we made it a priority to make sure that we had safe and welcoming environments. And Senator Hoffman and I were even looking at each other's board policies. As we've, a number of schools have kept up with the model legislation from MSBA to make sure that it is a priority. And there's no doubt that there's been failure on the part of adults, and that's it's saddening, it's frustrating, it's disappointing at every level, because we're in charge of protecting our children, at all points in time. I guess I've got a number of concerns with the bill itself, but also, to Senator Kent's point, I don't know that this provides the tools. This is a costly bill. We're giving $52 per student in the next biennium, and according to my school districts before this fiscal note came out, they were estimating the cost of this to be $130 per pupil unit that this would cost them. And we're not providing the resources. We're not providing the tools. We're providing the mandate in this bill. One of the more concerning parts, Senator Dibble, and you know, would love to get your thoughts on this, is in is the section where we talk about the fact that, and I've got it marked here, that extends beyond cyberbullying. And it's become a real problem, but we're asking school districts to basically be on line 4.8, really in an authority position off school grounds, which may or may not involve the student's education. A student sitting up at 10 p.m. Puts out a Twitter a tweet or a Facebook post or whatever, and it sounds like we're asking schools to take responsibility for that. And I'm wondering if you could address that section for me.
Thanks. Excellent question, Senator Pratt. I'll just draw your attention to line 2.25, paragraph 3, which deals with the scope and application. When we're talking about use of electronic technology and communication cyberbullying off school premises, we make sure that that's to the extent such use is reasonably foreseeable to substantially and materially disrupt student learning or the school environment. So there's a nexus back to the school climate, the school environment, the safe and proper functioning of the school itself. It's no different than if, in fact, a fight that started off-premise is brought back to the school, that sort of thing. So I think that paragraph deals with that concern.
Senators Peterson, Hoffman, Wicklund, Jensen, and Hall. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I have a question for the chairman of the committee. Mr. Chair, is there an intent in conference committee to allocate additional resources for the fiscal note that we have here of, what, $39.1 million in the next biennium? That's a question for you, Mr. Chair. Sorry. In the conference committee, I'm wondering if if the intent is to allocate additional resources to the school districts in order to help pay for this programming.
Members of the conference committee will allocate as much as we can in the general revenue and formula, and we're still waiting for targets. And that's what we know at this point. And as you know, each bill provides additional money for safe schools. There's the Climate Center addressing bullying. And so, you know, it's being looked at as a total package. Thank you for raising that, though.
Okay. Yeah, well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and I obviously had a lot to say on the floor as it related to the education finance bill. This, is, again, is another one of those things like all-day K or early childhood scholarships that there's a significant constituency of folks who want to see those things happen. And without even getting into whether or not this particular program or all-day K or early childhood scholarships are a good thing, and they may very well be, I question, again, the way that we're going about putting together this budget. We, in one hand, for example, ignore a provision in current law that requires teacher evaluation for every school district in the state under the guise of the fact that it's an unfunded mandate. Then we turn around and implement a massive unfunded mandate on school districts for a different priority that isn't in current law. And we put a lot of new money into all-day kindergarten. And that may be a great program, but it's not new money. It's not discretionary money for districts to use to help support their current operations. And then we put money into early childhood scholarships. Again, maybe a great program, but not money that's going to go to support existing school districts. And I can tell you, you know, this doesn't necessarily apply to my school district. My school district, due to a federal court order, is already implemented most of these things, but I know the strain that placed on my school district as well. And, you know, it, again, it's a question of the prioritization of this committee, and I think is going to leave school districts in a very difficult situation, a situation that is not going to provide the kind of resources that districts need to do the very basics, settling contracts for the teachers that we all acknowledge are needed in the classroom. And I think that's a concern that, you know, I have once again with this bill moving forward. And I won't even right now get into the merits of the bill. It's just, you know, at some point you need to make priorities. And I would suggest that the priorities maybe ought to be supporting the things that our schools do already rather than piling on additional programming, additional mandates onto the districts.
And members, I believe there was, you know, testimony just underlining the fundamental expectation that when you enter the school door, that it's a safe, nurturing environment. And but you know, we had 8 hours discussion on the on our bill on the floor. I expect that'll continue on if this passes. Senator Hoffman.
8 hours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as we look at this, there is going to be some revenue generated per pupil unit that goes to back to the school districts. And for the districts that I represent, you know, we've already budgeted out these types of things. But for the matter at hand, Mr. Chair, I move that we accept Senate file number 783.
Members, as amended, that is before us. We do have others that we're going to pose questions or additional comments. If you'd like to waive that, who would like to provide additional comments? Senator Hall and Senator Pratt. Senator Hall. And we have before us Senate file 783 as amended. Be recommended to pass and re-refer to finance. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dibble, I'm sorry, I've got a couple other questions here as people were talking. My understanding is this does also affect charter schools in the same way as a public school. Does it affect private schools and homeschools in the same way?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Hall. Excellent question. I appreciate that. It does not. Private schools and homeschools are not subject to the provisions of the bill.
So just to follow up, thank you. So if a private school student puts something on Facebook towards a public school student that was harassing or could be looked at as bullying, the schools could do nothing about it.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hall, that statement on its face is not true. Schools can do whatever they want. We don't prohibit their taking action. However, there's nothing in this bill that compels them to do something.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may have a number of questions and follow-ups, so I'll ask your indulgence. One of the concerns I have with the bill, Senator Dibble, is how broad a lot of the language is written, and I appreciate your response to Senator Hall saying that you didn't want to be too prescriptive. But I've seen testimony by Professor Paulson from the University of St. Thomas with concerns about infringing on First Amendment rights. I'm looking at one section here that talks about it's subdivision 6D, where schools must give all student groups equal access to school facilities regardless of the content of the group member's speech. To me, that seems overly broad, and I don't know if you have any thoughts or comments on that.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. That's meant to protect exactly the concern that you have. I think that's responsive to concerns that somehow some group or another will be favored. And, you know, the decision of Tinker v. Des Moines, people usually understand it in the context of limiting students' free speech rights in schools, really more about protecting students' free speech rights, but in inappropriate context. And I think, you know, that's really about making sure that students who form clubs or groups or whatever associations aren't inappropriately excluded, even if their values or their beliefs might not be popular or might be, objectively or not objectively, but might not square with the way some other kids feel about a particular subject. For example, religious, kids with a religious perspective. We hear about that a lot, and how somehow if they articulate their religious point of view, they'd be construed as harassing other kids, and that's just simply not the case, and that's what we're trying to get at with that.
Sir Pratt.
And I appreciate that, and I fully support that. I do think there are some instances, and I'm looking at the prior Lake Savage policy right now that says the school district reserves the right to reject or cancel any request to use district facilities on the grounds that it is contrary or detrimental to the purpose of the schools or the school district or deemed not in the public's best interest. And so I'm thinking of, let's talk about a group that we might classify as a hate group wanting to use the school facility. Shouldn't the school, based on community values, be able and whether it make the determination whether or not it's detrimental, where this seems to kind of lock them in with very little judgment to be able to be applied?
Right.
Sir Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and Senator Pratt. Absolutely, yes. And that's I think how we understand the extension of student free speech rights in the context of the school setting. And I don't think this provision is in, at variance or in conflict with that. I mean, you see the legislative purpose and intent language to make sure that the example always given, of course, which was I think. Subject of a subsequent court case that turned on the Tinker decision. I'm not a lawyer, so I shouldn't be doing all this, but I read up on it last night. There was a young man who wore drug paraphernalia or promoted smoking marijuana or something on his T-shirt. That was considered to be pretty disruptive to the school setting. Mm-hmm. That wasn't classically protected. Hate speech, likewise, advocates violence against a particular group of folks, not permitted. It's all about striking that appropriate balance so that there's no material and substantial disruption of the good order of the school. The rights of other students and the work or discipline of the school is the language of art.
Mr. Pratt. I'm just looking at lines on the 14th Amendment, lines 8.3, must give all student groups equal access. And to me, that doesn't necessarily leave any room for discretion and judgment. And so if there were, I'll just throw it out there, some sort of 8.3. Well, let's just call them a hate group for some reason, whether or not it's based on sexual orientation or race or religion or whatever. This, to me, even though the intent seems to indicate that we have a valid goal, really the law itself locks in the school district as I read this, with very little room to maneuver and make reasonable, sound judgments.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, we can bring in that conditioning language. That would be a really reasonable adjustment to make. To the extent that the speech does not materially and substantially disrupt the .. whatever the magic language is that they tend to lift right out of Tinker v. Des Moines.
Equal access. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, the other problems the concerns I have with the bill really go to the First Amendment concerns that I'm sure you've seen the testimony of Professor Paulson.
Perhaps.
I'm sorry, what?
All the blur. I'm sure I have.
I'm sure it is. But Professor Paulson lays out that the bill would prescribe government content regulation of speech by minor students and others in a way that is not permitted by the First Amendment freedom of speech. He goes on to say that that the terms of speech are regulated and prohibited by government actors are unconstitutionally vague and overbroad, and that the bill would vest in the state enforcement bureaucracy broad enforcement discretion with respect to the task of regulating school district policies and practices, and again talks about them being extremely vague. And to follow up maybe a little bit on Senator Peterson's comment, we're asking schools to do more. And maybe the question I have is, why are we focusing on the school aspect and not strengthening the civil protections that we give to students and allow law enforcement to maybe be the lead on this, to work with schools, to partner with schools, versus requiring additional responsibilities on schools themselves?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. All excellent questions, Senator Pratt. A couple of responses. One is, I believe Professor Paul, I do remember his testimony, by the way, was really written to an earlier draft of the bill. Since that time, we've worked very closely with the Attorney General's office, and there are a number of changes, the legislative intent, as well as, you know, we did a substantial revamp to the definitions of bullying and behavior and the like. And all of it really, you know, had an eye on protecting free speech rights within the bounds of the school setting. So I'm guessing that Professor Paulson probably would have very, you know, if he was truly doing an objective analysis, because, you know, we did this in conjunction with and brought in literally all the language that the Attorney General's office recommended to us. To make sure that we were meeting constitutional tests and thresholds and court precedent decisions. To your second question, members, that's a fundamental misunderstanding of this bill. If we think we're trying to create new crimes or criminalize certain kinds of behavior, what we're trying to do is, as I said earlier to Senator Hall, we're really trying to address bullying before things rise to some level of criminality. You know, ideally, what we're doing ultimately is doing prevention. Sometimes prevention does come in the form of a response after the fact when some bullying has occurred. If that response is tailored in a remedial fashion that has an eye towards not labeling, not attaching records to people's names, that was a concern articulated earlier by a testifier, that we're teaching and bringing kids along and redirecting and teaching skills of empathy and appreciation and understanding. You know, we're not coming down with the hammer of law enforcement. There are plenty of laws in the books, and we have resource officers in our schools, and, you know, we can deal with issues that rise to that level already. But, you know, our goal is not to, like I said, create punishment unless it's appropriate, you know, punitive actions unless it's appropriate, but really respond in a measured approach with a design towards prevention, future prevention, and really recognizing, like I said earlier, kids of all kinds do all kinds of things at some point throughout their life, and we just need to be smart about that.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, I guess, one last comment. Senator Dibble, I appreciate what you're trying to do. My fear is that we're maybe trying to move the pendulum a little too far the other way, and there'll be unintended consequences. We've worked with, as a school board member, we've worked with SBA. We've worked with Department of Ed. There are plenty of resources out there for schools to implement strong bullying policies. While the law may only be 37 words long, Prior Lake Savage has a five-page bullying policy that goes into great depth and detail for our district, what's right for our community. Anoka-Hennepin has one that's even more in-depth and detailed, and I think school districts have the resources if they choose to use them, and what we need to do is rather than come down with the force of law and make something that's overly vague and prescriptive, in some cases overly vague and in other cases overly prescriptive, as in, you know, the annual training requirements and the $26 per pupil unit that, that this bill would cost as an unfunded mandate to school districts, we need to have MSA, MSBA, and all of our partners working together to make sure that students are safe. And so I'm not going to vote against the bill based on its intent, but just simply based on its content at this point.
Mr. Chair, just
Senator Dibble, I think those points have been made and reinforced and rebutted.
I appreciate Senator Pratt's points. The goal of the bill is to encourage and incent local self-determination, you know, with some, you know, establishing a floor of some minimal expectations. I'll just respond by saying, you know, if the world were all rosy and peachy today, we wouldn't be hearing from kids about their real lived experience. You know, and I commend you and your school district's leadership. Many schools are simply not responding to kids in need and parents in need, and we're trying to address that.
Further discussion? Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm doing double duty today, as are you, although you have a higher priority here being chair of the committee. Senator Dibble, I'm just going to move to strike Section 1, the purpose and intent. And this has nothing to do with the substance of the bill. It's just bad form. These kinds of things actually don't belong in law, although I understand why they're put in when bills are introduced, because it's a statement. It just is not something that we should actually be putting into law, and maybe you want to wait till this hits the floor and strike it out there, but I'm just going to make that motion at this point, Mr. Chair.
Okay, well, Senator Hoffman has a motion for the bill as amended to pass, and you would delete Section 1?
Yeah, just the non-substantive purpose and intent statement.
He can do it. Okay, we have the motion to delete Section 1, Senator Dibble, to remove legislative purpose and intent.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that some legislators feel purpose and intent doesn't belong in law. This language, though, I will ask members to vote no on the Nienau motion. This was developed with the request and with the advice and assistance of the Attorney General's office, the Attorney General, to provide clarity and to respond to critique and criticism that the bill has received along the way. In the opening presentation of the bill, I explained why this was placed in the bill to respond to. Even after we place it, the criticism still comes in, but we can point to clear black and white language. A conducive educational environment for all students, ameliorate the effects of bullying and teach students. And it's really to provide some clarity as the legislation goes forward, so there is no doubt what we're trying to accomplish.
Senator Nino. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, I understand that, but if you need clarity, it should be in the legislative language. If the intent is unclear, it probably should be written a little differently. It's just bad form to legislate this way, which is why I'm making the motion. I'm not going to roll call it, but it's just not the right way to write law.
Okay. Further discussion on the Section 1 deletion? All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion does not prevail. We now have Senate File 783 as amended, moved by Senator Hoffman. Further discussion? Not. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Dibble, and to all of our testifiers.
Thank you, Mr.
Our
Chair and members.
Our meeting is adjourned.